Ann Arbor is ground zero for kit houses, if you don't know that, and we're going to show you a lot of kit houses tonight, so it's really exciting to be here in front of everybody. It's probably hard for many of us today to imagine being a young couple in their 20s, selecting from a catalog a home like the Hamilton, and then sending off their hard-earned dollars to buy, sight unseen, the promise of a new home. This promise would arrive in a railroad boxcar filled with over 10,000 pieces of lumber, parts, and paint, which would have to be unloaded and hauled by truck or wagon down dusty dirt and gravel roads to the future home site. There, the couple, with the help of friends and family and their own hard skills, hard work, and perseverance, and a 75-page book of instructions, would turn that boxcar full of parts into their future home. For hundreds of thousands of family, the story of the Hamilton is their story, a story that was repeated across America as families took this leap of faith into pursuit of the dream of home ownership. When I purchased our home in 2003, I didn't know much about kit homes. I learned it was a Sears kit house from information that had been passed along by previous owners. I was fortunate that over the years, the previous owners had taken such good care of the house that almost all the original details of the home remained. And if I had any doubts, I simply had to open the Sears Modern Homes catalog to find that even down to the smallest detail, it was a perfect match. But our interest in the history of the home really took hold after a visit we had a few years ago from Ron Salo. You see, Ron's parents built our house in 1926. Ron told us how his parents, Floyd and Ruth Salo, with the help of Floyd's brother, Glenn, built it at Hamilton on Taft Road. He explained how they had selected a reverse floor plan so the windows in the living and dining room would face south to take advantage of the natural light from the sun. He shared photos of the house under construction and photos of the family in their home. Here's Ron as a young boy on the front porch of our house. And here he is during his visit on the same front porch. It was a wonderful opportunity to learn about the history of our home firsthand. But we realized there are thousands of homes that share our history and we wanted to learn more. So we've made it our mission to find kit homes around Southeast Michigan and share the story of these homes. We hope that after tonight's presentation, you'll know a bit more about kit homes and the kit homes here in Ann Arbor. We're going to start first with the history of kit homes and kit houses and Michigan's very important role in that history. Next, we'll walk you through the process of buying and building your own kit house based on the experience of an Ann Arbor family. Next, we'll show you the steps we take to identify kit homes. And then, and probably the most exciting part of the evening, a photographic tour of kit houses here in Ann Arbor. And this is exciting for us because most communities we go to, we have a few kit homes. We have a lot of kit homes here in Ann Arbor. In fact, we're not going to be able to show you every kit house in Ann Arbor, but we're going to show you a bunch. So we're going to start off with a few definitions just so everybody understands what we're talking about. So when we refer to a catalog or a kit house, we'll often use the term a catalog or mail order house. And these were any houses that were built from plans provided by a catalog home company with materials that were ordered from the same company. So you have to have the two together. You have to have a set of plans and you have to have the materials. If you had a set of plans and you got the material from the local lumber yard, it's not a mail order house or it's not a catalog house. You have to have the two together. A kit house was any catalog or mail order house that was built using pre-cut lumber. And we'll talk a little bit more later about the importance of pre-cut lumber. And then finally, people often use the term Sears house for any kit house. It's become synonymous, kind of like Kleenex or Xerox. But hopefully after tonight's presentation, you'll understand that not every kit house came from Sears. In fact, many of the kit houses here in Ann Arbor came from companies other than Sears. So let's show you some examples of kit houses. Here's one. Here's another. In fact, what you'll see is kit houses come in a wide variety of sizes, styles, finishes, architectural designs, probably more than you expected. So the history of kit houses started right here in Michigan in Bay City. And the idea for the kit house actually started with this. a concept known as a knockdown boat. And in the early 1900s in Bay City, there were several companies that were selling what were called knockdown boats. And what a knockdown boat was is a boat that you would build from a kit. The design of the boat, the frame of the boat, was actually preassembled in a factory in Bay City. So they'd build the frame of this boat all the way together, and then they would knock it down into its individual parts, wrap it up, and then ship it off with a set of instructions to customers across the United States. And then that customer would get this kit with all the lumber for their boat and a set of instructions and would put it all together and then presumably take it out on the water. And if you'd done everything right, it would float. You learn quickly whether you had or not. Well, in Bay City, there was a young man, a lawyer named William Sovereign, and he was taking note of the work going on in these knockdown boat factories and the success that they were having selling these boats. And he thought, well, why can't we extend this idea to homes? Because when you're selling boats, you can only sell to people who live on or near the water. You know, you got to be on a lake or by the ocean. But people build houses everywhere. Couldn't we do the same thing? Sell people a kit for a house that they would assemble themselves. Well, William took this idea to his brother Otto, who was in, he was kind of a marketing guru, and Otto kind of pondered this for a little bit, and he said, well, you know, maybe that might be a good idea, but, you know, we've never done this ourselves. And that didn't deter William. He sat down and he started sketching out plans for homes and garages. And then took those to a local lumber mill and said, can you turn this into a house? Well, they did. They found a company in town that would take these designs. And so they started this company in Bay City called the North American Construction Company. Well, Otto Sovereign, being the marketing guy, said, well, that's kind of a long and boring name. Let's give it a better name. Let's call ourselves Aladdin Homes, after the Aladdin and his genie who could build a palace in a day. Aladdin Homes will promise you the ability to build a home in a day, or pretty close to it. And so this idea of selling kit houses was born in Bay City in 1906. And the Sovereign brothers, particularly Otto Sovereign, realized that in order for them to make a go of this, they had to make this idea as broadly known as possible. And he realized that the way to market to people was not through building and trade publications to people who were in the construction industry. You had to sell the idea of building a house to people in popular magazines of the day. And so they did. So they took out ads in magazines like Saturday Evening Post and Collier's. And believe it or not, people started sending in orders. And they started ordering kit houses and building them themselves. In fact, this idea took off in a way that I don't think they really realized that was going to go, because the Sovereign brothers, it was really just a handful of people in an office in Bay City. They didn't have their own production facility. They didn't have their own factory to make all the materials. They had to get that all supplied from companies in Bay City that they ordered from. And so very quickly, 1907, 1908, 1909, 1910, soon the Aladdin Company was selling over 1,000 homes a year. And they had contracted with a local timber mill, lumber mill in Bay City called Lewis Manufacturing. And after several years, Lewis came to the Sovereign brothers and said, you know, this business is going great. We're selling all these homes, but we're really going to have to expand our facilities to take on this additional work. And to do that, we're going to have to ask that you give us a bigger piece of the pie. Well, the Sovereign brothers weren't so keen on that idea. And this being Bay City, where there was a lot of lumber mills, they went down the street and said, International Mill and Timber, would you like our kit house business? And International Mill and Timber said, well, sure, we'll take your kit house business from Lewis. And Lewis said, well, guess what? We've learned how to make kit houses too. And so they started up their own line of kit houses under the Lewis Homes name. And so for several years, Aladdin and Lewis were both selling homes and shipping those across the country from Bay City. And then the International Mill and Timber folks came to the Sovereign brothers and said, business is going great. We're shipping out homes faster than we can cut them. We need to expand our facilities. You're going to have to give us a bigger piece of the pie. Well, you might kind of see where this is heading. Well, this being Bay City, there was another lumber mill in town that the Sovereign Brothers could send their work to, so they did. And in fact, they went and bought their own facility. And so International Mill and Timber said, fine, we'll start selling our own homes as well under the Sterling Home name. And so within a very short time, about 6 or 7 years from the start when Aladdin first started selling their homes in 1906, we had three companies in Bay City all selling kit houses to customers across the United States. And so Bay City, Michigan became the hub of the kit house industry. Well, if you have a great idea and you're making money at it, of course, everybody else wants to join the game. And so in 1908, one of the biggest mail order catalog companies in the country, Sears Roebuck, said, oh, well, let's start selling catalog houses. And then a couple of years later, another largest catalog company, Montgomery Ward, started selling their houses under the Wardway brand. So when we refer to Wardway, that's Montgomery Ward. And another large competitor was the Gordon Van Tine Company in Davenport, Iowa. And just to show you how interconnected everybody was, Gordon Van Tine not only sold their own homes, they provided all the homes for Montgomery Ward. So they were often selling the same style homes across the country. So here in Ann Arbor in 1910, the city had a population of 14,817 people. And it was a small town, but it was a town that was growing. And during those early years of the kit house industry, companies like Sears were selling houses like this. This is the Ivanhoe. And here's an Ivanhoe in Ann Arbor. In fact, this model was featured in the catalog, but specifically references having been built in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And we've gone by this house a dozen times. If the owner's here, don't take offense. That garbage can is always there. I've decided it's either a protest statement or yard art. I'm going to go with yard art. And if you ever see somebody running up and pulling it away and then taking a photo and running, taking off, it's probably us. So that's the Sears Ivanhoe. Move forward to 1920, and you can see the population of the city of Ann Arbor is growing quickly. In fact, almost 32%. And as Ann Arbor was growing, so was the kit house industry. In fact, the 1920s was the best of times for the kit home industry. What was going on in the United States was, after the end of the First World War, or as they referred to it then, the Great War, we had a big explosion of suburban development, particularly around major cities, places like Detroit, Boston, Philly, but even smaller towns like Ann Arbor were seeing growth as well. Both Sears and Montgomery Ward offered financing for their homes, so that made it easier for people to purchase their kit homes. And during these peak years, companies like Aladdin and Sears were selling thousands of homes a year across the country. Now, we do have to put this in perspective. You know, in a year, there might have been 100,000 new homes built across the United States, and they selling 2,000 or 3,000 homes is significant, but it means that there's a lot of houses out there that were not kit homes. So while we will find neighborhoods, especially in places like Ann Arbor, where there are a lot of kit homes in the neighborhood, more often it's like 1 out of 20 homes on a neighborhood might be a kit house. And one of the things that was driving kit house sales and suburban development were the railroad and streetcar lines and interurban lines here in Ann Arbor. You can see this is downtown. There was a streetcar system that kind of served the university area, but then there was streetcar and interurban lines that ran out across Packard and Huron and out across Jackson Road that connected east and west, Packard to Ypsilanti and Jackson Road out to Dexter and Chelsea area. And along these interurban and streetcar lines, people were converting farmland into new subdivisions, and then people who were moving into these and buying lots and building homes in these subdivisions were oftentimes buying kit houses. And so when we look at the development of where kit houses occurred, where kit houses were built in Ann Arbor, they're often across these lines. And here's an example. This is the local trolley that ran down Packard. And then you can see, here's Ann Arbor in the 20s, and you can see how new subdivisions are kind of popping up even outside the city limits here south along Packard and heading west out on Huron where it splits at Jackson and Dexter Roads. And so in the 20s, we see houses like this. This is a house on Jackson Road, Kit House. This is a Sears house on Packard. And then this happened. So Wall Street crashed, and the United States first turned, the economy first went to a recession, and then into the Great Depression. And while Ann Arbor's population had boomed between 1920 and 1930, very quickly things turned very bad for the kit house industry, and obviously the economy for the United States as a whole. Sales didn't fall off immediately. It wasn't because of financing and aggressive liberal financing by the kit house companies. They were able to keep sales going, but by 1931, sales were in like hundreds of homes per year versus thousands. Both Sears and Montgomery Ward had been deep into mortgaging, providing mortgages for their customers. And when those customers lost their jobs and could no longer pay and defaulted, Sears and Montgomery Ward lost millions of dollars. In fact, Montgomery Ward got completely out of the kit house business because of that. And it was a PR disaster for these companies because many times they foreclosed on their customers. So people who had built houses with their own hands were then put out on the street. You can imagine how that went over. Things got so bad for Sears, they briefly closed their Modern Homes division in 1934, reorganized, no longer did mortgages, and started selling homes again in 1935. And so the homes that were built in the 30s tended to be more modest. So here's an example. This is a Sears house and another Sears house just a couple doors down from it. And you can see how that affected population growth in Ann Arbor, where before the city had experienced 30% growth, as just a modest 10% growth between 1930 and 1940. And we don't see very many kit houses, very few examples that we've been able to identify here in Ann Arbor during that time period because of that. Sears offered their final Modern Homes catalog in 1940. That's the cover of it. They did try to do some small-scale plan developments called home club developments. But what happened is, just as the economy really started to recover at the end of the 1930s, turning into 1940, war broke out in Europe, so 1939. And then obviously with the bombing of Pearl Harbor in December 7th, 1941, all the industrial production in the country turned to the wartime effort. So there was very little available for home development. And so we don't know exactly when Sears stopped selling homes, but it was about late 1941, early 1942. They were still selling homes separate from the catalog through some sales offices, but that's when Sears finally stopped selling their modern homes. After the war ended, all those soldiers and sailors came back from Europe and the Pacific and started having families. And again, there was this huge suburban boom, even in towns like Ann Arbor. But kit houses fell out of favor with new homeowners. They wanted to get kind of a ready-built home in a planned subdivision or development. So places like this. This is, I'm going to blank on the street, but this is Stadium up here in Ann Arbor, and you can see the kind of development that was going on in the late 1940s, early 1950s. While Montgomery Ward and Sears had gotten out of the kit house business, the three Bay City companies still kept at it, and after the war ended, they went back to selling homes. And they changed the styles of the homes, so you no longer saw arts and crafts style bungalow houses, you get to see this, an Aladdin ranch. But this is a kit house. But the sales never approached the levels they saw during the 20s. they got a little bump up, and then it was a long, slow decline for these companies. And what really did them in was when the economy, a U.S. economy tanked, went into recession in the early 1970s, oil embargo and what have you, inflation. And that led all three companies to finally go out of business. Aladdin being a family-owned company, and they were the last company selling houses and stopped about 1982. So, but even with the end of the kit house industry as we know it, we still have all those kit houses that were built all those years ago to provide a trail back into that history.
So who would be crazy enough to buy a catalog kit house? So you haven't seen it, you don't know what it is, but you're sending away your money for it? Well, we have to remember that back then, people bought things from catalogs. Sears had a really good reputation. You could get whatever you couldn't buy locally from them, and they had a money-back guarantee. If you weren't happy, they would take it right back. And Ward also had that same sort of guarantee. So it wasn't so crazy. And we liken it as Amazon today. You're sending off your hard-earned money, you haven't seen it, and you hope it arrives and it looks like what you want. And there were advantages to buying kit homes. You would save your money on the material because they used their machinery to precisely cut the wood at the exact lengths. You are not having to waste all that by measuring twice and cutting once if you're good. And they cut down the lumber waste down to 2%, and Aladdin said it saves all the costs, that adds no value. They sell direct from the forest to the home, so you're not messing with the middleman. And this is an amazing illustration of how they were able to get 20 feet of lumber from a 16-foot board. It sounds like magic, but with the angles, yes, it does compute. So, yeah. And then Sears did this real-world experiment with the pre-cut lumber. How long it would take you to build your house the traditional way, 583.5 hours, versus the honor-built way, only 352 hours. So you're saving much time and effort if you go with them. And also an advantage is that they had architects who were designing these modern homes. Now, I don't know how many of you hired an architect recently, but they're not cheap. And back then, they weren't cheap either. So you could rely on them to provide you with a unique home that was very designed well. And here we see an example of the Architects Council. This council consists of a chief architect, a core of able assistants, including a woman advisor, who understands the requirements of the housewife. So again, you're thinking, who really controls, right? So I like that ad. That's nice. And here you see this foolish man throwing away his money on rent when you could actually be putting that money towards your very own home. So Aladdin didn't finance it. You had to put down a cash deposit and pay the balance on delivery. So the kit home sales and marketing campaign really increased. Aladdin would pay you a dollar for every prospective customer you let tour your own house. Yeah. And Sears had lots of sales offices where they had scale models of the home so you could see and imagine what it would be like for you. And they had the finishes so you could see the paint colors and the wood stains and imagine what your new home would be like. And I've sort of become obsessed with finding one of those real models. They exist in the world. I've seen one with my own eyes. And I came across something that's almost as good. It is a railroad model. Yes. So this is a Sears house. It's the lovely home number 102 from the 1908 catalog. So I was so excited when I found this on eBay and I ordered it, sight unseen, and it arrived. And it is a kit and it says previous experience recommended, which I don't have. So I found a club in Novi where we live and those guys built it for me. So I like to imagine that this came from this boxcar. So real life, that would be what would happen if you did your things properly. Oh, and think of it. Sears and Ward had a lot of built-in customers. They were the big dogs in the catalog business. Aladdin didn't have that history, and so they would distribute their own catalogs, and they're a little bit more special than those, you know, the ones that everyone has. This is a leatherette bound, and it has, in gold, the buyer's name. So when you got this, you knew it was special, and it's just for you. And they have these doorknobs that say Aladdin House. So if you are allowing those dollar people to come through, you're reinforcing the message that this is an Aladdin House. And it starts right from the front door where you have a little Aladdin door knocker. And underneath, there's a message for you, so you'll know which kind of a house you're in.
So next, we're going to talk about the process of ordering your kit house. So it starts with requesting a catalog. And here's the cover of the 1927 Sears Roebuck Modern Homes catalog that Andrew Rickelman and his wife probably perused through. Or they may have gone to a local sales office. There was actually a sales office here in Ann Arbor for a few years. Either way, they would have gone through that, reviewing the range of models and prices, and they would go through and look and figure out which one made most sense for their family, not only for what they needed in terms of space and size, but also what they could afford. And we've purchased original Sears catalogs from eBay, or auctions, and won some auctions for catalogs on eBay. And oftentimes when we get these original catalogs, they'll have little pencil notations on various pages where somebody went through there and circled maybe the model they wanted and did some math to see if they could afford it. And you always sit there and wonder, which one did they pick? Well, in Norb's case, or Andrew Rickelman's case, we know which one he picked. We'll show that in a second. Once you've decided on the house that you want, you request a quote from Sears Roebuck for the house that you wanted, including any changes or upgrades. So just to give you an example of what people were looking at, here's a couple pages from the Sears Modern Homes catalog. And all the houses in the catalog had a page like this. So it's a line drawing of the house, generally shows the price, the floor plan, and then a listing of everything that was included with the house, and also opportunities if you wanted to upgrade certain features of the house, if that was an option for these houses. And some of the houses included interior photos as well. And the idea here was to give you a sense of what the house would look like when it was completed. Now, our model, the Hamilton, also included interior photos in some of the catalogs. And we can tell you from personal experience that these renderings tend to be very generous with the size. The rooms may not appear as large in real life as they appear in the catalog. And of course, these rooms are painted and furnished, everything from furniture to drapery to carpets, all purchased from Sears Roebuck. Yeah, it was a whole package. Because of course, when you buy a new house, you buy a bunch of stuff to fill it. So here is the form that you would complete and send to Sears Roebuck. And it's very basic. You just tell them what model you want. Important information like where's the closest railroad depot where that material is going to be delivered. And then what kind of things you wanted as far as your heating system, your plumbing, your electrical. And then you would send that off to Chicago. And you also had the opportunity to request financing. So anybody done a mortgage application recently? This is your mortgage application with Sears. Let me show you. Here's a little bit closer. How about that one? Five lines. Again, important information. Do you own the lot that you're going to build on? Do you have access to water and sewer? I always love this line. How much cash will you have to invest in the deal? And then, of course, how much can you pay each month? And then what is your occupation? Now, what's interesting about this, besides that it's incredibly short, is that there's some things that Sears doesn't ask about, which is very unusual for the times. And that's things like, what is your race? What is your gender? What is your ethnicity? Did you recently immigrate here from a foreign country? Do you have a last name that has a lot of consonants, not vowels? All those would be strikes against you that would prevent you from getting financing from your local bank. And so for many families, whether it was African-American families or women or recent immigrants, they couldn't get financing locally, but they could get financing from Sears Roebuck. And so for the dream, the American dream of home ownership, for many of those families started here because they could get financing from Sears where they couldn't get it from anybody else. So a question we often get is, how much do these kit houses cost? So here's a very basic model. This is entry level. This is the ferry. This is from the mid-1920s. It's about $945. And at the other end, top of the line house would be the Lexington, one of the largest, most expensive houses Sears sold, $4,228. Still sounds like a deal, doesn't it? So what we found from information from people like Norbert and from other houses that we've got information about the sales price, the total cost of these houses was generally 2 to 3 times what you'd see as a list price. So if you open that catalog up and it said $945, it bottom line ended up costing you $2,000 to $3,000 to build that house, whereas a house like the Lexington would be about $8,000 to $12,000. And the reason for that is that list price doesn't include everything that goes into the house. There's extras. You know, kind of like when you go on the car lot and you want the heated leather seats and all the fancy stuff, that's extra. So there were extras with these Sears houses. And then you also had to pay for things like the lot, a basement foundation that was on you, and any labor that was required to build the house, things that you couldn't do yourself, you had to hire people to do for you. So I mentioned the extras. What were those? Those were things like heating systems. Now, we didn't have heating and cooling back then. Cooling was you opened a window. Let me go back there. So bottom line, down on the bottom here, this is the Hercules pipeless furnace. This was the entry-level heating system for your house. And it's a coal-fired furnace that gets centrally positioned in the house. No pipes to it. It just has a grate. And it shoots hot air up into the house. And the idea, the theory behind the pipeless furnace was that if you pumped enough hot air up into the upper story of the house, it eventually distributed itself and it warmed the entire house. From people who've lived through that, they've said that didn't always work according to plan. You could step up. You had a furnace with all these pipe and duct works. People often refer to this as the octopus, because of all the arms extending out. But that did get hot air to various rooms of the house. And then top of the line was a steam or hot water radiator-based system. And folks who have that, or still have that, some of them in their houses, say that's the best kind of interior heat that you can get. So, and they did offer that for an extra price. But this was not included in the list price for the house. You had to pay extra for this, so in your order. Electrical fixtures, also extra, but you had your choice of styles. Indoor plumbing, often a first for many families, but these were modern homes, and so you had to purchase toilets and sinks and bathtubs to go in your house. And many people were starting to buy cars, and so garages were another offering from Sears that you could include with your house order, just $126 for the basic model, or $154 if you wanted to upgrade a little bit. So all extra that got added to the bottom line price of your house. So here is the letter from Sears Roebuck to Mr. A.H. Rickelman. And it states, as manager of Sears Roebuck Company's Honor Built Modern Homes Department in Detroit, Michigan, I want to thank you for your order that you have given our salesman, Mr. Burkhart. And at the same time, I'd like to have you feel that since your order has been entrusted to me, I will cooperate with you as the building progresses. The policy of Sears Roebuck Company requires me personally to meet each company customer who has favored us with an order for an Honor-Built Modern Home for the purpose of confirming any understanding you may have made with our salesman and to assist you by the supervision of our fieldmen. And then it continues on. So this is the letter that Norbert's father received after he had placed his order. And they asked him to come down to the office in Detroit, Michigan to just make sure that they had gotten everything straight. And so this is the house that Norbert's father selected. This is the Sears LaSalle. And what's really interesting about this house is, although you can't tell from the outside, this is actually a duplex. So even though it looks like a single family home, it's actually designed for two families, the upstairs and downstairs floor plan, providing all the amenities that you would need on a single level. And here's the order form. for the house. And these order forms are very detailed, down to things as specific as what kind of flooring did you want in each area of the house. Oak flooring was often used in living rooms and dining rooms. And then in the less public spaces of the house, you would have yellow pine or maple flooring, depending on the room. And again, all the details going on with the house, as well as all the extra things, like what kind of heating system he wanted, as well as changes to the plane. And in fact, this particular model, although you can see this is wood siding here, Mr. Rickelman specified that he wanted a brick veneer built up to the top of the first floor. And so we'll see that. That was extra. He had to pay extra for that, but it was a modification that Sears would make. And here's the bottom line. Sears estimated the total cost of this house to be about $11,000. Mr. Rickelman took out a loan for $6,600 and put almost $2,200 into the mortgage. So Sears would typically lend up to 75%, and so that's what he did. He took out a mortgage for 75%. Sears covered 75% of his costs, and then he put 25% down. So the items that were included with his order, all the framing, lumber, and siding for the house, the roofing material, including the gutters, all the flooring, as we've mentioned, millwork, so this is all the trim around the windows and doors, and the doors and windows themselves, including all the hardware to operate them. You had a choice of lath or plaster wallboard. Norb's father actually ordered the wallboard product. This is, it looks like drywall. It comes in sheets, but it actually was plaster base. This is in the 1920s. Nails by the keg, because you had a lot of nailing to do. And you got to pick what color interior and exterior paints and finishes you wanted with your house. So you got to pick the colors. And these came from Sirocco brand paint. Sirocco standing for Sears Roebuck Company. They sold everything. And then some of the models included some extras. Things that were not included in your order in terms of what was being shipped to your house were things like plaster, brick, and foundation block. Those were too heavy to ship by train. It would be too costly. So you ordered those locally, and Sears would coordinate that with you. And then you would get that from a local supplier.
So while you're waiting for your house to arrive, you had homework. You had to dig your foundation and build your basement. And you can see here that Sears would help you out with that if you want to buy the Wizard Concrete Block Machine or the Triumph. Ooh, that sounds good. And the 1-minute concrete batch mixer so you could really ramp up your production. And you see this industrious worker showing how it works. And it sort of looks like reverse evolution as he gets more and more stooped the longer he works, because that's hard work. Oh, I have a back pain just looking at it. And here, they're loading your boxcar for you, and they methodically pack it so that things that you're going to need first when you unload your boxcar, those things are going to land on the top of the pile. And some of the companies didn't actually mark their lumber or pre-cut it in the beginning. I can't imagine getting a boxcar full of lumber and then figuring it out yourself. But they did come to it, and then that helped you a little bit figuring out what went where. Oh, and you had to have lots of family and friends because you had about 48 hours to unload your boxcar before you get charged, because they have other things to do besides keep your car for you.
And this is you probably won't be able to read this just because of the lightness of this, but this is really fascinating. So this is a letter from Sears Roebuck to Andrew Rickelman explaining the delivery schedule. And so when we talk in the introduction, we kind of leave the impression that you get a box car and it's filled with everything you need for the house. But in fact, what actually happened is the first box car would be all the framing lumber to construct the house. And then various additional materials would arrive as needed, based on the schedule that Sears had worked out with you as a customer. And so actually, Norbert's father would have probably gotten about 8 different deliveries from Sears of various materials, all scheduled based on when the construction progress was going on with the house. So things that were needed for the interior, like sheet plaster, you didn't want that just sitting around outside. It would get damaged or destroyed. So those got shipped later. And in fact, he would have gotten this postcard. He did get this postcard from the Michigan Central Railroad Depot indicating that his order of sheet plaster was on its way from Ohio and could be expected on, let's see, December 5th, 1927. So it gives you a sense of how the house is progressing.
And you got a helpful manual with your materials to help you build your home. And here is the introduction from the Wardway catalog. You are entering into a pleasant enterprise, the erection of a Wardway ready-cut home. No matter how many buildings you may have built, it is absolutely necessary that you read these instructions before any of the work is started. So some things about humans just don't change, I guess. And Sears says, do not take anyone's advice as to how this building should be assembled. I'm sure your neighbors and friends would be like, oh, you don't have to do that. They just tell you to do that. But and there is a short film by Buster Keaton. It's online. You can watch it. It's free. It's called 1 Week. And it talks about a couple that is going to build a kit house. And an unhelpful person remarked their lumber for them. And so the outcome is not exactly what they had expected. And it's quite funny.
So when you're dealing with somebody building the house themselves, typically from what we've heard, it typically took folks 3 to 6 months to complete. According to Sears, a man of average skill and ability could build one of their homes. So I don't know what that says about men of that time or men of this time. That would be quite an undertaking for most folks. And here's an example. This is a Sears Rembrandt under construction here in Ann Arbor, being built by a University of Michigan professor and his family. And here's that house today. So he must have done a pretty good job, still standing. In the case of Norv's father, he actually contracted a lot of that work out with local contractor in Ann Arbor. It's very fascinating because Norb's father saved everything. You actually have the list each work of who worked for that contractor, their name, how many hours they worked, and how much they got paid that week. Pretty fascinating. So we know down to the person who worked on that house. Pretty cool. Yeah, this Sears Rembrandt's on 7th, South 7th. And this is interesting. So as you're working on your house or having work done on your house, all your correspondence with Sears is taking place by mail or maybe by telegram. And so if you'd run into issues, it wasn't like just pick up the phone or send an email. You had to, send something off to Sears. And so this is a letter back from Sears saying, "Dear Mr. Rickelman, we are glad to let you know that the electrical wiring material is being furnished so that each flat can be wired for a separate meter," because it was going to be a duplex. It was going to have two families in it. And it was merely a typographical error in mentioning the word furnace instead of furnaces. The furnaces are being furnished for the building. And the paint for the shutters will be furnished in the emerald green color as requested by you. We are glad to have you question the different items in so much as they were not clear to you. If any other matter comes up in connection with your building project, do not hesitate to get in touch with us, as we will be very glad indeed to be at your service. Sincerely, Sears Roebuck. So they really did try to make things right with their customers, and obviously Norb's dad was one who kept on top of Sears. If they didn't do something right, he made sure he got it corrected, and as well he should. He was paying a lot for that. And final letter here. This is April 1928. "We are pleased to know that your house is nearing completion. Enclosed is our payment in the amount of $331.92, representing the balance of the cash that we agreed to lend you." And here at the bottom says, "After your house is fully completed, we would very much like to have a photograph of your house. This need not necessarily be an elaborate affair. A Kodak picture will do very nicely, and trust you will be good enough to let us have one at an early date." And Sears requested their customers send photos of their finished houses, and they would often use those in advertising to promote the houses as they were sold. And this kind of informs the Rickelman family's choice of home, the LaSalle. This is from the 1930 census, and here we have Andrew Rickelman and his wife, Bertha, and son Elmer, son Bernard, son James, and son Richard, and daughter Ruth. And living at the same house were Hubert Guest and Lola Guest. So I don't know which floor the two families were on, but the Rickelmans were essentially renting part of their house, and that would help finance the cost of the house. And they needed a house that could accommodate two families, because when we got to the 1940 census, Andrew and Bertha, Elmer, Bernard, James, Richard, Ruth, Norbert, Thomas, Joan, and Dolores, all from the same family. So, and there were two more. And I think all but one were born in the house, right? Yeah, that's a different era for sure, but a fascinating part of Ann Arbor history. And here's the house on, this is 514 Pauline. And it's funny, Norb's family is probably better known in the Ann Arbor community because there's a vacant lot south of their house, or let's see, that would be east of the house. And this is just a couple blocks from the University of Michigan Stadium. And so for decades, they used that lot as for parking. And in fact, people told stories, Norb told us a story about people would come say, oh, my grandfather parked at your parents' lot way back when. And they kept coming and coming. So so that house was in the family for almost 90 years. And they sold that recently. And here's the other side. Duplex house. And again, think of that 90-year-old house still standing, great condition. And here is the what we call testimonial. So this is from the catalog. I'm trying to remember, this might have been 1929 catalog. Here's the Sears LaSalle. It says, we're well satisfied with our LaSalle home. The plan is the best I've ever seen for an income home. Our dealing with you people were very satisfactory, and I figured I'd save money building your way and found the material better than I expected. A.H. Rickelman. And what's interesting is, this is not a Kodak of this house. If we go back and look here, you can see kind of how the house drops off with the grade. So Sears just substituted their own catalog drawing and called it good. They did that quite a bit. It wasn't always the exact house. We have to remind ourselves sometimes when we see these and we track it down, it's like, well, it doesn't match. Oh, they just used the standard image. Now, the other side of the Rickelman experience was their financing through Sears. And it's also very illustrative of what families were going through in the late 1920s and 1930s. Because here in January 1930, Andrew Rickelman gets a letter from Sears saying, one payment is past due on your building loan account and another will be due in a few days. If you permit your payments to run behind, it will be difficult for you to catch up. See payment schedule we sent you when the loan was granted to you and make each payment on time. And so he was obviously running into a challenge. And 1 month later, dear Mr. Rickelman, have you gone back to work again, Mr. Rickelman? Hope you have and that everything is coming along nicely for you. Tomorrow another payment is due on your mortgage loan account, and then it will take $124.28 to bring it strictly up to date. And March 2nd, dear Mr. Rickelman, we have your letter of February 20th in which you tell us you're getting the money from your mother to pay the taxes and asked us to an extension of the loan next October. If it is not possible for you to refinance at that time, you may be assured it will carry your loan along temporarily to give you a chance to do so. And this was experience for many families. They had purchased their house, gotten a mortgage from Sears, and then either lost work or were working very few hours or for much less than wages and could no longer afford the loan that they have. And then this letter from Sears, your mortgage loan matured on October 1st, 1932. At this time, the outstanding principal balance, including interest, is $5,093.26. Of that amount, the sum of $407.26 is past due. In view of the facts as stated above, we think that at this time we had better help you out by refinancing your loan on a new basis, so we have the following plan for your consideration. And they go through that. And so in some cases, Sears did make an effort to work with customers to refinance. But Mr. Rickelman was running into the same problem that Americans across the country are running into. And you won't be able to read this, but the gist of this note is, this is a handwritten note that he indicates, I was forced out of my job March 4th, 1933, and draw on welfare work since then, at the exception of 6 weeks. And so, you know, how can you pay a loan when you probably are just barely being able to support your family? And so for Mr. Rickleman, he didn't lose that house. Obviously, they still had the house for almost 90 years. What came to their rescue was the Homeowners Loan Corporation. So this was a Franklin Roosevelt era, New Deal era program that was formed to help people who were in default refinance into loans that they could afford. And there's some correspondence related to this. And it must have been enough of a relief to the Rickleman family because they were able to then pay off that loan and keep that house in the family. So, and very fortunate for them. Not everybody had that good fortune. So, but a fascinating look at that little bit of American history, and I want to thank the Rickelmans for sharing that with us. It's very much appreciated. Okay. So we're going to quickly run through how we go about identifying kit houses. So here's an example of a kit house. This is in Plymouth, Michigan. And here's a catalog image that we're comparing it against. And what we look for are things like, does the roof line match the house? If the windows are still original, do those match? Many of the Sears models had these distinctive columns, so we look for those. And then some of the Sears houses also had these distinctive brackets, so we look for those. And of course, things like, is it in proximity to a railroad or where a railroad used to run? Or maybe other houses in the area are of similar design. We're all looking for all these different clues to help us identify the houses.
So you can come inside our house. And you can see here is our back step, and there's stamped lumber right there. And originally, the stamp was on the underside of the step, but then apparently a subsequent owner wanted to show it off, so now it's on the top, which is fine for us. And when we redid our bathroom, we pulled down the drywall. It was not original, don't worry. And we found a stamp there, so we took a picture before we covered it back up. Here's an example of more descriptive language. Here it's just a letter and some numbers, but here it says rafters, so perhaps you would see it where a rafter should go. Sears has their logo stamped in many of their fixtures, Sears Roebuck, but you have to remember, Sears sold everything to everyone, so just because you have fixtures from Sears doesn't mean your whole house came from Sears. And then they also were very thoughtful with novice carpenters, and they would supply you with these rectangular blocks in your stairwells so that if you're working with an angle, it gives you a little more wiggle room, so that's a telltale sign. Hardware is sometimes a telltale sign. This is our doorknob, and yes, it matches the catalog exactly.
And if you're really fortunate, you may have an original set of Sears Roebuck blueprints showing the design of your house. This is for Hamilton, not our Hamilton, unfortunately. I wish we had ours. But here in the corner is the logo for Honor Built Modern Homes. And somebody actually brought one of these up earlier. This is a shipping label on the back of a piece of millwork. This is very often you would find the name of the person who is being sent to, the railroad station, and then it says, if it can't be delivered, return to 925 Holman Avenue, which is the address for the Sears Roebuck Corporation. But again, millwork by itself isn't proof because, and shipping label isn't proof by itself because people often ordered materials from Sears separate from the house. You could buy these materials, construction materials, separately. But in combination with other things, it can help us identify and authenticate a house. Another way that we authenticate houses, so let me just explain that distinction. Identification is just when we see a house and we say, oh, that looks like a Sears Hamilton, but we don't know for sure. When we authenticate a house, that means we've put together enough information that we feel it proves that it is a Sears house. So one of the ways we authenticate is with mortgages. So, for instance, in the case of the Rickleman family, they had a mortgage for their house. If I didn't know for sure that was a Sears LaSalle, and I didn't have Norb and his family there to tell me that was a Sears house, from the mortgage I could identify it. So we look for names on mortgages like Walker O. Lewis and E. Harrison Powell. Montgomery Ward, we also have names that we look for, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the McClure Company. They also did mortgages. And so even though the sales records for these companies have been lost to history, there still is this paper trail sitting in county clerk's offices where you can look up these deeds and mortgages, and that's actually how we've been able to identify and authenticate many of the houses in Ann Arbor. And actually, this is from the Washtenaw Abstract Company, which maintained records of mortgages for Washtenaw County for many, many years. This is their records are kept at the Bentley, and it probably won't be able to read it, but on this page, this is in Calkins Packard Street subdivision, which is down Packard. We have Thomas Riordan, Walker O. Lewis, Thomas Riordan down here. So these are showing us multiple Sears and Montgomery Ward houses in this one subdivision. And this is actually the mortgage for our house. So this is a mortgage taken out by Floyd Salo in 1926, and he took out a mortgage for $2,950, and his monthly payment was $15 a month. And unlike the Rickleman family, unfortunately, the Salos, although they didn't live in the house at the time, they actually were living here in Ann Arbor because Mr. Salo was a store manager for the A&P grocery store company. They lost their house, lost it through foreclosure, and it sat vacant for a couple years until another family moved into it. So unfortunately, again, the Great Depression, people, you know, that was the circumstances many families went through.
You can find sources of information in many places. Local historical societies and museums many times know what's in the neighborhood and want to share with you that information. The catalog shows testimonial houses, so you can see sometimes the address, the city, and a name, and so we can go and see if it resembles what is supposed to be there anymore. Books and newspapers are a great source of information. We have a few of the books that we use here. Houses by Mail is our Bible. We're always driving around with that so we can compare what we're seeing with what is in the catalog. Websites are very helpful. Lots of people are aficionados and know way more than we do and are willing to share their information with us. Owners and neighbors oftentimes know what they have and will tell you, and sometimes they're right. Real estate listings can give us a lead, and then we can sneak inside and see photos to see if it actually looks like something we like. Oh, and also obituaries we've found sometimes tell. Because if it is something that you and your spouse built together and you live there your whole lives, it's an accomplishment and you mention it.
So this is our standard disclaimer where we say we're going to do the photo tour. To the best of our knowledge and understanding, these are the houses we think they are. Actually, I think almost every one of the houses we're going to show you tonight has been authenticated in one way or another. So we're like 100% sure on almost all these houses. So let's get started with the tour. So Wendy talked a little bit about the where we get information about Sears houses. And what's really cool here in Ann Arbor is people have been documenting these houses going way back when. In fact, Grace Shackman, is Grace here tonight? Oh, there's Grace. So May 1988, Grace was starting to document houses on the Old West Side and in the surrounding neighborhoods. And as she put information out about houses, people started sending in information to her saying, oh, well, we own a Sears house too. And so here's another. In fact, this article in the Washtenaw Impressions for the Washtenaw Historical Society actually included a list of houses, and that's how Wendy and I got started here in Ann Arbor, because Grace and Rob Schweitzer had so graciously put together a list of houses. It's like, wow, let's go look. And this was another article they did. This is in the Ann Arbor Observer. You can read this online. It has a lot of really cool stories, including stories where they spoke with original owners, people who had actually built houses themselves who were still alive at the time. And Rob must have totally had the bug because he actually wrote a book, co-authored a book, America's Favorite Homes. Here it is. And this is, I would say, more geared towards the architectural angle, but has a lot of interesting history. If you want to get, like, the deep depth and primer on kit houses, read that book. So I'm going to show you some maps of the city just to kind of give you a general sense of where houses are located. This is north end of town. So this is just north of downtown. Here's Huron River. You've got Pontiac Trail. So that's collection there. This is West Side. So this is I-94. Then we've got Jackson Road and Dexter Road. There's like a gabillion houses on Dexter Road. That's not an actual number, but you can see. And then here we go. Here's the University of Michigan. So West Side, here's the stadium, Pauline, and then Pauline's further up. And then we've got Packard, and then continuing on. And then as we go further east, out along Packard. So this area here at Platt and Packard, for those who don't know early, I know it's not early, like early 1900s Ann Arbor history. This area was known as East Ann Arbor. It actually became its own little separate city for a few years and then was later annexed into the city of Ann Arbor. But this area, you can see a lot of kit houses. And then over here in what's called Washtenaw Heights, this is in Pittsfield Township between Ipsy and Ann Arbor. There's a collection of Sears houses as well. So there are about 200 kit houses that we've identified in Ann Arbor, and about 130 of them that we've authenticated. You're not going to see all 200 tonight. We're going to give you a representative view of them. This is actually Sears Hamilton that's not in Ann Arbor. There's no Sears Hamiltons in Ann Arbor. This is in Ypsilanti. This is actually the first Sears house that we saw outside of our own area. There's a Sears house up the street from us. True. That's a true story. Actually, the owner's here tonight, so I won't put him on the spot, but we found this house through a listing Sears company that's still in existence as of this moment. They actually have a listing where owners could submit and say, I live in a Sears Hamilton, and we were able to track him down and drove past his house, and it's beautiful. I mean, he's just done a ton of work on it. He shared some photos, and so this is his Sears Hamilton, and you can see how it's similar and how it's different. Each of the houses are unique. They all took their own owner's little imprint and design on them. So even though they came from the same model, they all have their differences. This is Sears Hamilton in Ypsilanti. And the Sears Rodessa, this was a very popular model for Sears as an entry-level house. It's not a huge house, but big enough for a family maybe starting out or an individual. And Grace has a really interesting story about this house in one of the articles. And it talks about the gentleman, she actually got a chance to talk to the gentleman who built this house. This was the first house that he built, and he was only able to build this house because he couldn't get money from the bank, but Sears was willing to finance it. And then he built another Sears house, and actually the Minor Street Puritan, the folks, are you still here? Yep. The gentleman who built this house also built your house. So, and then he got himself, that kind of got him started in the building industry. So here's the Rodessa. And this is on South First Street. A popular model in Ann Arbor was the Clyde. There are several Clydes in Ann Arbor. This is also a popular model for Sears. And you can always identify the Clyde by these big brackets. We call them Sears brackets. They weren't exclusively on Sears houses, but here's the house on Packard. Showed this a little bit earlier. Here's another one. The Hathaway, the Sears Hathaway. Sears offered this for a number of years. Kind of an English cottage style design, they refer to it. It actually came in two different floor plans. So there was the smaller Hathaway. This is the bigger Hathaway, a little bit larger in size. There's a bunch of them in Ann Arbor. Here's one. You can see it still has the original trellis design on the porch. This was an option that Sears offered. You could get the Hathaway with straight gables, not clipped. And this is very rare. I know of like two or three of them in the country. There's one in Ann Arbor. It's on Pine Ridge. And this is another Hathaway on Hoover, West Hoover, right by the stadium. This is the house that got us started on McClure. This is the 101. And you can see it's got these distinctive columns on the front. But the small little dormer, there's a Lewis house that looks similar but has a much larger dormer. So here's a 101. And here's another one. And another one. And you can see those brackets. These, and there's, I think maybe like a half dozen of this model in Ann Arbor. So pretty distinctive with those columns. And McClure also sold a duplex style house. This is the 1018. This is also on Packard, right next to that Sears Clyde we showed earlier. And you know, it's not the most special looking house, but it's interesting to know that you could buy something more than a single family house. This is the Sears Crescent. This is one of most interesting designs that Sears sold, easy to identify. On the front porch, you'll see either two or three columns. Two columns was the smaller floor plan, three columns was the larger floor plan. And this is on Wright. This is really interesting house. So if you drive down Wright, you will not see this view because this house actually faces Pontiac Trail. And my understanding, it was a family owned some farmland. They split off a piece for a daughter, and they built this Sears Crescent on it. So the back of the house faces Wright, and the front of the house faces Pontiac Trail. This is on Jackson, right where Jackson and Dexter split. That's a Sears Crescent. Here's on Stadium, West Stadium, just west of the stadium. Another Sears Crescent. And this is another one. This is in that East Ann Arbor area, so Packard and Platt area. I think it's Maplewood is the street. These dormers may be original. We see quite a few Sears Crescents where they finished the upper story, the second floor, and then have dormers on the house. So those may be original. I'm not sure. The Dover was another popular house. We refer to this as a cat slide house. The cat slides down the roof. Dover typically has three windows over here. Sometimes we see two. Obviously, here in the catalog, they show two. This is a Dover. I think this is Kensington. You see the three. This is another one. I think this is Potter. This is the Wardway Kenwood. Looked very similar. You can see it's very similar in design to the Dover, just a little bit less of a cat slide here and an inset door. And there are several of these in Ann Arbor. And here's one, Hutchins. This is on Hutchins. And again, you can see it has the same kind of design as the Dover, but some slight variation. So this is a Montgomery Ward house. The Puritan. This is a very popular, kind of smaller Dutch colonial model sold by Sears. very popular design. There are a couple in Ann Arbor. The owners of one of the, at least one of the owners are here. They're in, their house didn't get included in this, but it is this design. And this is Lakewood. I think it's Lakewood. So this is on the far west side off of Jackson Road. And this just got repainted. It used to be white. So this is the 1109. So nice new fresh paint job on that. This is the Montgomery Ward Norwood. This was a testimonial house. So this house was actually listed in the Sears catalog with the original owner giving kind of the same as the Rickelmans did. And there you can see that. What's interesting about these windows don't match up exactly, but they're just, over time, or maybe even the original construction, sometimes those things do get changed. But we do have a mortgage, and we also have the testimonial, so we know this house is the Wardway model that they say. This is on Kepler Court. Haven't mentioned Harris Homes at all. So Harris was another kit house company out of Chicago. See a few examples of Harris houses in the area. They're more popular in the Chicago area. They actually got started in 1893 as the Chicago Wrecking Company. And that a wrecking company was actually a salvage company or recycler. And they, if you remember the book, The Devil in the White City, about the World's Fair in Chicago, they actually had the contract to take down all the buildings after the World's Fair ended. So that's how they got started. And then they got in the kit house industry. These distinctive columns are hard to miss. are hard to miss. And so this is Abbott Montgomery, 300 Montgomery. So this is a Harris house. This is the Wardway Cambridge, a Dutch colonial house. Dutch colonial houses in Ann Arbor. You can see this got the two-page spread. So this is a higher-end house from Montgomery Ward. This is over on Independence. Oh, good. Tell her she was in the show. And there's this area, there's a lot of kit houses off of Independence. That was a Wardway Devonshire that's on Pontiac Trail, and the slideshow got a little crazy there. Again, another testimonial house, this English Tudor design, and the owner talks about how they were able to get a new house cheaper than what they were paying in rent. Used to be paying $75 a month in rent, and look at this place we were living in. And I've looked around in Ann Arbor for this house. I haven't found it yet. I don't know if that's a made-up one or, I mean, the people are real, but whether that house is made up or. The Sears Valonia. This is the quintessential Sears house. This is, if you go to any town and it has a Sears house, it probably has a Valonia. It was one of the longest selling models that they had. I remember last summer, Wendy and I were driving through some little one stoplight town in Indiana, and we crossed the railroad tracks, and there's the Valonia. They're everywhere. Surprisingly, Ann Arbor just has, a couple examples. This was the early 20s version. This, as you get later into the 30s, they switched up the design a little bit, but it's pretty much the same design. Very easy to spot with these columns if they're still in place. This is on Elizabeth, and I love this house. This is, look at all the original railings, columns, siding, timbers, barge boards. What's that? Original bathtub. You got it all. What about this garage? What about the garage in the back? Is that Sears? You don't think so? Okay. Now, this is one of the larger houses in Ann Arbor, and we actually found a couple examples. This is from Lewis, so Lewis out of Bay City. This is the Lewis Marlboro, and this is off of Lincoln. And it's interesting, it's kind of, notice how the entryway is kind of offset from these windows. That's kind of a distinctive element of this design. And then another one on Martin Place, a little bit different. They had actually two different floor plans. So in the second floor plan, this is actually lined up. But we think these two we don't have anything that authenticates it. But based on the design, we're pretty sure these are Marlboros. And just to make things even more fun, Sears had a smaller design called the Brookwood that looks almost identical to the Barrington. And this is over on Ferry. Sears Brookwood. This was actually the first house I identified in Ann Arbor by myself back when we first got started doing this. I was like, I've seen that house. It's not a Barrington. It's another B house. Oh, Brookwood. That's it. So that's a Sears Brookwood. And all the companies would let you do custom designs. So it's kind of hard to read, but there's actually a custom design house here in the bottom right-hand corner. And here's that house on Dexter. So this is a Montgomery Ward house. And then we had an owner send us a photo of their house, and we know it has a Montgomery Ward mortgage, but it doesn't match any of the designs. So this was probably a custom design where they had Montgomery Ward, or maybe a local architect design the house, and then Montgomery Ward provided the materials for the house. And then you can see it's got a brick exterior.
So when we first started our Ann Arbor touring, we were working from Liss, and so we knew we were headed to a Wesley, and I'm the one that hops out of the car to take photos because it's slightly less creepy if there's a lady taking a picture than a man, I would say. And so we stopped, and sure enough, here's that Wesley. And I'm taking the picture, and Andrew says, look next to it. Oh, it's another Wesley. And I'm taking the picture, and he says, yeah, look next to that one. Another one. So three little Wesleys all in a row. And I'm used to be a children's librarian, so three little pigs, three little kittens, three little Wesleys really spoke to me. And because it is Ann Arbor, you can maybe tell which one is a rental. But I think it's a testament to the construction and the materials that it looks as good as it does after all these years of student renters.
Since we've got some rundown Wesleys, we also have some nice Wesleys. This is over on Sewell. And according to the information Grace got from the family, this would be an open porch. They built this house, enclosed this originally to provide more space in the house for the family. So that was a modification they see. But look, I mean, it's got the columns, the brackets, the porch railing, everything. So that's a beautiful Wesley. This is 2030 Hill. And it's interesting. So Wendy and I were taking photos, and I like to share these photos on Facebook. So I posted this photo on Facebook of this house on Hill Street. And my sister-in-law said, "Is that house in Ann Arbor?" I said, "Yes." And she said, "Is it on Hill Street?" And I said, "Yes, 2030 Hill." She said, "Oh, my great-grandfather, Max M. Pete, built that house, or had the house built." Max M. Pete was a doctor, a professor at the University of Michigan Medical School back in the day. He did neurosurgery back in the 20s, which is hard to imagine doing that kind of work, and he was a pioneer and innovator in that. And apparently, according to my sister-in-law, he was also very frugal. And so the idea of having a house of this nature built and saving a buck really appealed to him. And her mother, Judy Preston, has told us some stories about when she was a kid. She used to run around up in the kind of third story up here. This is where there's enough room up there the kids could run around and play. And so this house is actually a kit house. This is the Sterling Vernon, and it was the largest house that Sterling offered. Very rare house. There's only a few examples of this that have been located. This is Sears Honor. Sears Honor is a very rare colonial-style house Sears offered for several years. Of 12 in the United States. Surprisingly, there's 4 of them here in Southeast Michigan. And there is one in Ann Arbor, and you can almost always identify the Honor by those distinctive kind of eyebrow dormers. This is on Arlington. And the owner, I think he had to leave, but he was nice enough to share photos of the Sears Honor. It's a beautiful house, obviously been well taken care of by them. And now, I don't think all the interior is original. But it looks great. I was like, "Well, I got to show this." Yeah. And that. Some of the very early Sears houses had a lot of stained glass in them. And actually, some of the interiors on the very early Sears houses are nicer than some of the later ones. And just to show, this is one in Berkeley, Michigan. Neighborhood that has 5 of the biggest Sears houses that were sold, and this one's still got the trellis work from the catalog. So, like I said, there's several in the area, Southeast Michigan, Ann Arbor, Berkeley, Clawson, Dearborn. So, whatever the next E city is, that'll be the next one we'll find. And finally, the very final stop on our tour, the Sears Magnolia. So the Sears Magnolia, this was the largest and most expensive house sold by Sears. You can see in this year it was $6,488. They sold it for about 5 years between 1918 to 1923 that it appeared in the catalog. Only 8 to date were identified as having been built. 7 are still standing. One of them's in really rough shape. One or two of them are funeral homes. This one is in Canton, Ohio. It's been fully restored by the current owners. When they bought it, there were holes in the roof, and it was falling down. They fully restored it. So we made our little pilgrimage, and there's Wendy with our houses by mail. Yep, it matches. Just turn your head a little. Or there. So the Magnolia was so large, it took 2 boxcars to ship all the framing lumber. And these columns on the front of the house are made of wood, which is pretty amazing, all that detail work as well. And among Sears kit house researchers, it's kind of like this. you mention a magnolia, and people are like, really? But in an article that was in the Ann Arbor Observer many years ago, it included the statement, the founder of American Brooch, Francis LaPointe, lived in an elegant Sears home since torn down at 4158 Washtenaw, so big it included a ballroom in which Henry Ford once danced. Well, that's tantalizing because there's only so many big houses from Sears, and really a ballroom? I mean, the only house that had something like that was the Magnolia. So was there a Magnolia in Ann Arbor? So here's Francis LaPointe. Well, Francis LaPointe owned about 25 acres on Washtenaw Avenue between Ypsilanti and Ann Arbor, where now, if you know where the county complex is there, that was his property. And the good folks here at Ann Arbor District Library put their hands on some old aerial photos. I mean, this is like, you can see they're like leaning out the plane and taking their photo. And that's Bonaire, which was the name of his estate on Washtenaw Avenue. And there's a house there. And if we zoom in, oh, this is, the Bonaire was very nice. And it was one of the few homes near that had its own pool. Sorry, there we zoom in. And we look and we're like, Now I've shown this house to a number of Sears Kit House researchers, and every single one of them I've asked so far has said they think this is a magnolia. Unfortunately, that house is no longer there. This is a magnolia in Syracuse, New York. And this was an article, kind of hard, but this is of the house. And it has this very large addition on one side, which we can see if we go back here. See how it's, so I think this photo was flipped. And this is from the daughter of the second owner of the house, Vladimir Bibikov, shared this. It looks really good. The story behind this house is after Mr. LaPointe sold to Mr. Bibikov, and then Mr. Bibikov sold to Holy Ghost Seminary, which built on that property, they took off the top of this house and bricked it over and converted into some use for the seminary. And then the county bought it, and it was part of the court annex for a number of years and then got torn down about 15 years ago. And I don't think anybody ever knew that that might have been a Sears Magnolia. So I think with what we've been able to see from the folks at the library who shared this from their old news archive, that this was a Sears Magnolia on Washtenaw Avenue. And thanks to Grace for setting us off on that trek and journey. I was never sure. I said, I'll keep looking. And finally, I think we've got enough evidence that proves that it was a magnolia. So we'll never know 100% for sure, I don't think. But Ann Arbor may have once been home to a Sears Magnolia. So with that, is our final stop. Thank you very much. I know it ran very long, but I hope you appreciated it.